Okay, turn to the book of 1 Thessalonians. Last week we looked at the first chapter. This is one of the few books that Paul wrote that really had, most of the other books were trying to correct some problems in the church. 1 and 2 Corinthians, all their issues. Galatians, they seem to have turned back to their old life. This is the one, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, are letters to this church that is really doing pretty well, that things were going good. And I'll get into it on the second chapter. What most people do, a basic outline is chapters 1 through 3, Paul's looking back at what happened there when he first came, what he did there. Chapters 4 and 5, he's looking ahead. This is where we talk about where they were worried about people that had died. They expected Jesus to come back. Now people have died. What happened to them? Where are they now? And that's when we're going to get into a little bit about the rapture and where that comes from. There, to get a background of this church, if you look back at Acts chapter 17, verses 1 through 5, I'm gonna read those quickly. People had believed the Gospels. Jews, great multitudes of God-fearing Greeks. Well, let me read it. It's easier to read it. Acts chapter 17. Now, when they had traveled through Amphipolis, I think that's how you say it, and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, and there was a synagogue of the Jews. And according to Paul's custom, he went to them for 3 Sabbaths, reasoned with them from the Scripture, explaining and giving evidence that Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead, and saying, "This Jesus, whom I am proclaiming to you, is the Christ." That was the message he would preach in the synagogue. They were waiting for the Messiah, and he said, "Jesus is the Messiah." This is maybe 25 years after Jesus was crucified. So people knew. People had heard what happened in Jerusalem. And he comes and saying, "This is the Messiah, the one we're waiting for." In verse 4, "And some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, along with a great multitude of God-fearing Greeks and a number of leading women. But the Jews, becoming jealous and taking along some wicked men from the marketplace, formed a mob and set the city in an uproar. And coming upon the house of Jason, they were seeking to bring them out to the people." So, what Paul did was just preach the gospel. And as Jews became believers and God-fearing Greeks, and a multitude of them, the Jews became jealous and caused trouble. They created a mob. They created an uproar in the city. And Paul had to escape from to Athens. This letter was written as he was sitting in Athens. He sent Timothy back to see how things were going, and that's the crux of the letter. That's what he's writing. Timothy had come back and told him what was going on. Chapter 1, basically, Paul said, we preach the gospel. You were doing well. It's one of the few churches that says things were going great. Verses. Let's see, 8 through 9. "For the word of the Lord was sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and in Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith toward God has gone forth, so that we have no need to say anything." These people had become believers, and their faith had started to spread. And if he was only, some people think he was only there 3 weeks. Some people think he was there after that. It says when he was there for 3 Sabbaths. That he might have stayed a little longer. But something happened that this church, their faith started to spread, and the story of what happened there was going all over that region of the Aegean Sea. Verse 9, "For they themselves report about us what kind of reception we had with you, and how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. Jews were becoming saved, Gentiles were getting saved, and to wait for his Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, that is Jesus, who delivers us from the wrath to come." You're doing great. Things went well. The whole city was turned upside down, good and bad. But people all around us are starting to hear about your faith. And then, chapter 2, Paul, what most people think is, when he left, this mob that the Jews created started to criticize what Paul had done. So when he starts to explain in verses 1 through 12 of chapter, we're going to look at 1 through 6. When he begins to explain what he did, he's really answering these critics that say certain things about Paul, and we'll get into that in a minute. So what Paul is writing in chapter 2, he says, remember how we lived among you. Don't listen to our critics. Let me read verses 1 through 6, and we'll get into what... Most of the commentaries I read about this, it's like people take this like this is what church leadership ought to look like, and I'm not... What Paul is explaining is don't listen to the critics. People came in after us and said bad things about me. Let me explain what's really going on. And there's a quote I want to read from Leon Morris. He wrote a long commentary on the book of John. He's kind of I think he wrote in the 30s. And when you think about our world today and the world that we're living in and how kind of bizarre it is and things going on, and when you listen to Ravi Zacharias, he calls it Western theology, where you're getting Eastern and Western theology, and nobody can believe anything in secularism, and it's like you want to throw up gosh, could it get any worse? This is what Leon Morris said. This is what the world Paul was writing to, and the world that, it's kind of interesting that this is what that it was that time that God decided to send his son. This is what he says about the ancient world. It says there was, this is Leon Morris, there has probably never been such a variety of religious cults, of philosophic system as in Paul's day. East and West had united and intermingled to produce an amalgam of real piety, high moral principles, crude superstition, and gross license. Oriental mysteries, Greek philosophies, and local godlings competed for the favor under the tolerance of Roman indifference. The world was not a friendly place. Holy men of all creeds and countries, popular philosophers, magicians, astrologers, crackpots and cranks, and the sincere and the spurious, the righteous and the rogue, swindlers and saints jostled and clamored for the attention of the credulous and the skeptical. So you think our world was bad. The Roman Empire just kind of let everybody do their thing. There was, we're going to get into when Paul talks about the pure motives. There were religious prostitutes. People, the worship of that day was horrific. It's kind of interesting. I don't know why I stumbled on this article this morning. There was an article about Iceland. Did anybody know anything about Iceland? This is about how weird our world is getting. There was an article about Iceland that promoted what a great family values they have, but it's like they have 70% unwed births. 70% of babies are born out of wedlock in Iceland. And they were talking about how, but it hasn't affected the family at all. They have these great family values. And you, if I had any hair, I'd be pulling it out. I mean, you're like, and I'm like, why did they even write this article? Is it just to say to the United States, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about family values. Look at Iceland. You know how many people live in Iceland? What do you think? Yeah, the six people that are there. There's less than 400,000 people. Yeah, less than 400,000 people. And they talked about how happy they all are. And as I was reading that, I was like, Lord, what? Why would they write an article about this? And to say to the United States, don't worry about it. You know, family values, you can have family values and not even have family anymore. And you're like, what? So anyway, that's the world that Paul is writing to. That's the world that Thessalonica was facing. It was a coastal city where sailors were. So as he leaves this, he had to flee Thessalonica because of the mob. And now he writes back to them, and he begins to tell them, wait a minute, listen, and what he's really doing is kind of an apologetic for what happened there and who he was and what he did there. Let me read verses 1 through 6. It's kind of interesting because next week in like 7 through 12, he talks about three different ways he was among them. He was among them as a mother, a nursing mother, a servant, and a father. He talks about three different ways he ministered to them. But in this, let me just read verses 1 through 6 of chapter 2. He writes to them, "For you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain. But after we had already suffered and had been mistreated in Philippi, as you know, we had the boldness in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amid much opposition. For our exhortation does not come to you from error or from impurity or by way of deceit. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God, who examines our hearts. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with the pretext for greed, God is my witness. Nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though as apostles of Christ we might have asserted our own authority." So let's just kind of go through each one of these, and again, this is kind of, it might be a little bit of conjecture, but as people went through this, it's like, why is he explaining this to people about, and he's really reminding them, don't walk away from this. You have accepted the gospel. Don't listen to people that have come in after me. And what he says in verse 1, "Our visit was not in vain." You know this? Think about what happened. Think what happened in the synagogue. Remember the day you got saved. It's real easy, I think, to kind of forget, to kind of go back, and when things get hard and think, oh, maybe we should just go back to the old life. It was easier when I was just a Jew. And Paul says, don't do that. You know that our visit was not in vain. Look at the results. And that's what he talked about in chapter 1. You accepted the gospel. You understand who the Messiah was. Don't go back. Most people think the critics were coming in and saying, well, our group is bigger. You know, they created a mob. You know, this is kind of a fringe group, you guys. You know, come back to the temple. Come back. Give up. Look, you could go to the Greek temple. Remember how nice the worship was? Don't listen to Paul. Yeah, that's a fringe group. I mean, if our world ever, I mean, do you ever feel like you're on the fringe group? You know, are you ever afraid to talk to people because they think they're going to think you're a nut? I remember, it's almost like you have to apologize. I was talking to people in Phoenix one time, and this lady had a Buddha. She wears a Buddha all the time. And her husband got saved. They ended up getting divorced. Her kids are believers, and she's just kind of goofy. And I said, you know, what happened to your husband is kind of like what I believe, you know? I mean, and I find myself apologizing almost. And I'm like, Paul says, it doesn't matter how big the group is. Think back at what happened to the Thessalonians. It wasn't in vain. Remember what it felt like when you understood your sins were forgiven, that Jesus was the Messiah. It was not in vain. Don't listen to the critics. Verse 2, Paul says, "But after we had already suffered and had been mistreated in Philippi," let me read it. "We had boldness or courage in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amid much opposition." It's like Paul says, if it were not for God, we might have quit. I mean, and I think about that. You know, the courage comes from who God is, what he's done in our life. You don't have to be this, lone survivor. You know, I mean, you're watching that movie and you want to be the macho guy. Our courage and our boldness comes from who God is. Not that you have all the answers. I'm not going to talk like Ravi Zacharias. I'm not going to, people aren't coming to, 10,000 people aren't coming to a evangelistic. I mean, that could be pretty heady, you know. Paul says our courage and our boldness come from who God is. And he refers back to Philippi. It says, do you remember what I told you about what happened to us in Philippi? And if you go back to Acts chapter 15, that's when Paul got thrown into stocks, was beaten. I mean, when I think about it, sometimes I get embarrassed because, or I'm afraid because people might make fun of me or might not like me. I've never been in stocks, never been beaten for my faith, never. And I'm like, and when you look at Paul says, we didn't give up. Our courage came from who God was. Remember what I told you about what happened in Philippi? And that's when God opened up the jail and the Roman guard was like, oh no, we're gonna, he was ready to kill himself. And Paul says, we're still here. Don't worry, we didn't leave. So there's this sense that they were humiliated. Most people say, to put a wrong, the commentaries, that when he says they were mistreated, suffered and mistreated, that as a Roman citizen, they weren't allowed to treat people like that. They weren't allowed to put a Roman citizen in stocks and then beat them. And so when he talks about that, they were humiliated as a Roman citizen, but we even kept on preaching with opposition. And what most people think, the critics came and said, well, where's Paul now? He's a chicken. He ran away. Why would you listen to him? He's gone. He's never coming back. And Paul writes, wait a minute. We were here after we were beaten in Philippi. And our boldness, you remember that we preached, even with great opposition. Don't listen to the critics that I ran because I was afraid. And to speak to you the gospel of God amid much opposition, we didn't stop. I didn't run away because I was afraid. If you read in Acts chapter 15, they kind of had to get him out of town or they would have killed him. Verse 3. For our exhortation does not come from error or impurity or by way of deceit. Most people think that the critics were coming in there saying, well, he had wrong motives. He was trying to gather a crowd for himself. He was trying to grab a group around him. Paul says, our encouragement was not an error. You understood who the Christ was, that it was Jesus. This wasn't an error. The Jews would come back and say, no, this is, Jesus isn't the Messiah. He's supposed to be a king, not suffer. And Paul says, no. We didn't come with you in an error. Jesus is the Messiah. You trusted him. Our encouragement was not from impure motives. If you read in Acts chapter 15, it says, there were the Jews, a great multitude of God-fearing Greeks, and many leading women. A lot of the commentaries think Paul was gathering women around him. In those days, they had temple prostitutes. That they were accusing Paul of gathering these women around him because he had bad motives. You know, he wanted to have this following of women. And that's when I read that quote about Leon Morris. He says in there that the world was so messed up that they would blame Paul, saying he's gathering these people around him just for a following. He had impure motives. Our encouragement was not deceit. They were accusing him of just, Paul wants a following. He wants a group of people behind him. Look how big of a... Paul says, no, I was not lying. I was not deceiving you. Jesus is the Messiah. Keep trusting him. Our exhortation does not come from error or impurity or by way of deceit. Don't listen to the critics. And then verse 4, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God, who who examines our hearts. Paul says, it wasn't deceit and error and impurity. It was, we have been approved by God. This is, the power of the gospel comes from who God is, not who Paul is. We have been entrusted with the good news. I didn't invent this. Jesus is the Messiah. This isn't something that we just invent. We got it from God. And he might have been pointing back to the when he explained to them what happened to him on the road to Damascus. People wouldn't know who Paul was, that he was a persecutor of the church. And he says, it's not about me. It's not about me. We have been approved by God and entrusted with the gospel. I have to do this. God, it's like, we owe you this. I have been entrusted by God. And we want to, and we are not, and not as pleasing men, but God who examines our hearts. I'm not doing this to become popular. This isn't something that I'm doing so that I get this whole following of people and that people, and for me, I got to tell you, when you have the personality that you want to make people happy, this is a, you know, you got to be a little bit careful. I'm not saying this just, when you like to be liked, this can be a problem, you know. And Paul says, I'm not doing this to get patted on the back by a bunch of guys that say, look at what Paul has built. And I, you know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul talks about, let me turn to there, about my goal. He says, we want to please God, not men. God examines my heart. You know, Paul's like saying, it's important what you believe about me, but I'm not doing it to please you. I'm doing this because God has entrusted this to me, and I'm doing it to please him. And there's a whole set, and I think I've talked about this. There's a whole, do any of us have super pure motives? And that's kind of what Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Let me read 5 verses. Paul writes, this is right after Paul talks about some people were saying, I'm of Apollos, I'm of Paul. You know, each man's got to be careful how he builds upon it. And this is right at the end of that. Paul says, let a man regard us in this manner as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy. But to me, it is a very small thing that I should be examined by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even examine myself. It's almost like God called me to this. I am conscious of nothing against myself, yet I am not by this acquitted, by the one who examines me, but the one who examines me is the Lord. Why do we do what we do? I mean, do we all? Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and to disclose the motives of men's hearts, and then to each man's praise will come from God. Paul's writing and says, Thessalonians, I wasn't doing it to please you. I'm doing this because this is what God has entrusted to me. And I don't even examine myself. Am I? And again, when I drive here and I drive by, I don't know why I think about this every time I drive by Lake Point and you see all the cars and you see all the, and you're like, you know, we got to go, we got to bloom where you're planted. God has us, has me, has you where he wants you, whether it's at Chick-fil-A or my own business, or he has each one of us at a place and he says, I have entrusted this to you. Don't do it to please men. Be who you are to please God, because he's the one that examines my heart. Verse 5. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with the pretext for greed. God is my witness. Most people think the critics were coming in there saying, well, he's just trying to make you feel good telling your sins are forgiven. He's trying to flatter you. He's trying to get... Paul doesn't have good motives in this. He's trying to just get his following and flatter you with the idea that you might actually stand before God and be free. Paul says, no, no, we didn't come with flattering speech. You know that. And I think I remember I saw a poster one time. There was this rag doll that was going. Remember, well, you guys might be too young. In the old days, my mom had a dishwasher that had a ringer. You ever see their old ringer? Clothes washer. What did I say? Dishwasher? That would be a bad thing for dishes. A clothes washer. I remembered it. That's how you dried them out. You run it through a ringer. Well, this picture was a rag doll going through a ringer. And it said, the truth will make you happy, but first it'll make you miserable. And that's what I think of when Paul says that. I didn't come here with flattering speech. You have to understand first, you're in trouble. You know, you're a sinner. That's not real popular. That's not how you win friends. It's more how you make enemies. And Paul says, I didn't come here with flattering speech just to gather a group around me or to make money. People were claiming that most people think Paul was just trying to get money from you. You don't have to look far today. I want to be careful with this because I don't want to judge other people's motives. But when you see, and again, I probably shouldn't watch these things, the televangelists where you see them, they have their 10 secrets to the Christian life, right? And or the 8 promises, and we'll send those to you. And then everybody knows what's coming next. Just send me your whatever, you know, double portion. Now it's a double portion. And I just think all these people watching TV, signing checks. And Paul says, later on, he's going to say, you know, in the same chapter, we worked. I didn't take any money from you. So it was kind of, there. And he says at the end of this, nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though as apostles of Christ, we might have asserted our authority. He had the right to ask for money because he lived by the gospel. And later on he says, but we worked day and night. I was a servant among you. Don't listen to the critics. We didn't do this just to get glory, so that I would have this great church and I would have this whole following. But I could have asked for money. But that wasn't the point. I have been entrusted with the gospel and I shared it with you. Don't listen to the critics. We ran out of here, and he goes. I think he eventually goes back on the third missionary journey. He comes back. But there's this whole sense in Paul's leadership in this church was not about him. And he was saying, don't listen to the critics. And I was listening to a tape by Gary Inwood, and he had this thing. There's this whole, how many of you have read books or seen books on leadership? If you're in the business world, there's like a gazillion of them, right? And it's like, you ever thought about why is there all these questions about leadership and you see very little of it? And how do you understand? I mean, you've probably had to read a bunch of them, right?
You read one and the next one tells you.
And you have no idea. You have no, you know, and what does a leader look like or sound like? Or what age are they? Or what, and what Gary Inrig, he had an interesting talk or idea. It's really not about leadership, it's about stewardship. Paul was entrusted with the gospel. You and I have been entrusted with this thing. We have been brought into the family of God. My sins are forgiven. The older I get, the more I'm like, yikes. all of them? When I stand before God, I'm going to stand in His Son. It's a simple message. We've been entrusted with this. And Paul said, and Gary said, it's really about stewardship. And when I'm scared, I need to think my courage comes from God. Not my seminary degree, not who I was, not my courage comes from who God is. Stewardship means we're going to be truthful. It's not deceit. It's not in vain. I didn't lie to you. I need to be honest and true. That's what leadership or stewardship ought to be. Just be truthful. I remember one time I got a call. And does anybody else, like, every time I get a text or a phone call and I look and I'm like, uh-oh. Yeah, does anybody else do that? I mean, I'm like, oh, no. This lady got on the phone and just really mad. Really mad. And she was looking to point fingers. And I said, well, you can stop looking. That was me that did that. It was like, it was over room numbering or something like that. And I'm like, that was me. And also, so she didn't stop yelling. I mean, it was like still. But just be truthful. Just be truthful. Do I struggle sometimes? Yes. This we talked about last, about James. Why can't we just be authentic? You know, when I'm sad, I'm sad. When I'm happy, I'm happy. Just be truthful and authentic. Do it with pure motives. Don't think about what you're going to get out of this. You know, if I just did this, if I just had a better program, we could fill this room. Is filling the room a good motive? Or allowing God to do it? I'm not doing this for a following. You're not trying to get your my little disciples. I'm not doing it to please God or to please men. I'm doing it to please God. And I wrote on here, that is tough for certain personalities that want to make everybody happy. I said that to the old president of HKS. He said, what's your strength? I said, well, I like to be liked. And he goes, well, clients love that. And I said, yeah, it just drives you crazy, you know, because I can't make everybody happy. And when I don't, I'm like, Paul says, if you have real stewardship, think about pleasing God. That's it. Please Him. Not flattery. I don't want to. When you guys sing and I'm like, that was nice. I'm not saying that to just say, I mean, the music here is nice. And I'm not saying it to flatter you or to pump you up a little bit. But I mean, we give the gospel not to flatter people and not to just get this group behind me. And it's not for money. The way we do it here. It's not send me money. And it's not for position. I wrote on here, I remember when I was at seminary, somebody gave me a book by Chuck Swindoll. And they said, I'll have him sign it for you. Yikes. Now, would it be worth more for Chuck Swindoll? I mean, how in the world does the church fall for this? You know, what? Position. Who's Chuck Swindoll? So when I write a book, I'll sign it for everybody. I was talking to Amy. She had to write an 8-page paper, a 9-page paper. It was like 9 to 15 pages or something like that. And she said, I don't know. And when we get to the next class, there's going to be like a 30-page paper. And I'm like, I could probably write about my entire life and not make 30 pages. And she was, so if I write a book, it's going to be a pamphlet. Okay, it's going to be because I can't. Paul's writing about stewardship. I'm here to please God, not you guys. I'm not lying to you. And my courage doesn't come from me, because I was beat up in Philippi. Anyway, next week we're going to look at, and I remember, I think I got in trouble the last time I talked about Paul talking about being a mother. But wait till you read this. And it's such a cool image of Paul looking at the Thessalonians and saying, I was like your mom. I was like a nursing mom. So anyway, read ahead and understand what Paul is saying to them. Let's pray together. Father, again, we thank you for your word, and we thank you for who you are, Father, that you have entrusted to the likes of us this story, this message that the world needs now as much as it needed it in Paul's day. And when I became a believer in the 60s and 70s, Father, the world needs this message of your son and his forgiveness and his taking the penalty of our sin on that cross. Father, give us, when we are in situations where we're scared and afraid of what we might say or the right words, give us the words to say. Give us tender, gentle, loving hearts to the people around us that would draw people to you. Not to us, not to our ability to talk or to, but to you and to your son. Father, as we go from this place this week, help us with our kids, with their jobs, with just the people around us, that we would be a testimony to your goodness and grace. It's in your son's name I pray.